Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Well, thank you so much. Hi, folks. Welcome back to Close Up Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us again. We're excited because it is time for Dr. Victoria Monlock to be back with us. She's doing a series of broadcasts with us on women's health. She focuses heavily on it, and we always learn a lot when Dr. Vicky, as she is known to all of her patients, talks to us and explains a little bit about what she knows and what she specializes in. Dr. Monlock, by the way, is a practicing physician. She has over 30 years of experience specializing in women's health, family medicine, and preventative health and wellness. An OBGYN, I'll get it, by training, she describes herself as a wellness physician, partnering with her patients so she can deliver the best health care possible. And to her best health care possible includes hormone replacement therapy and treatment. According to Dr. Monlock, the foundation of health is hormonal balance, which traditional medicine, Western medicine, too often ignores or overlooks or outright dismisses. And Dr. Monlock says hormones ought to be the first thing that doctors examine. As she points out, when you get your blood work, done, when you go to see your doctor, he'll look straight in the eye and say, everything looks great. And you say, but why do I feel like crap? And she says, there is a disconnect there, and the disconnect is they didn't look far enough. They didn't look at your hormone levels. And Dr. Monlock says, we're just beginning to understand what living beyond menopause does to your organ systems. You have to have all of these modern inventions in medicine, but the only area that they haven't touched really is hormones and women's health. Dr. Monlock is the author of Full Bloom, Perimenopause, Menopause, and Beyond, where she explores and debunks the myths of menopause, revealing the science behind it all. There's so much to learn from Dr. Monlock and what she talks about when we bring her on. So let's bring her on now. Today we're going to be discussing with Dr. Monlock uterine and ovarian diseases and the importance of progesterone in preventing many female diagnosis problems. So that sounds pretty fascinating. Let's bring her on now. She's based in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Dr. Monlock, I was going to mention something about the weather, but I won't. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. How are you today?
I am marvelous and hope everybody had a faith-filled and wonderful family-filled Thanksgiving.
Yes, we sure did, and I hope you did too. So it's nice to have you back again. So let's continue. We've been talking about a lot of various issues with women's health in the last couple of weeks, and as I pointed out today, you want to focus on uterine and ovarian diseases and the importance of progesterone. So let's get into that. How important is progesterone in this area?
Well, it's the great balancer, and most people have never even heard of it. So everybody knows about estradiol. That's the female hormone that gives you your libido. That's what gives you your sexiness. That's what gives you your brain functioning for you and lets you sleep at night and prevents hot flashes and lets your bladder not leak when you sneeze and cough. But nobody gives progesterone any credit. It's like they're the poor stepsister that got left behind. And what progesterone does is balance. Because too much of a good thing can still be too much. It's like chocolate icing on your cake. Well, if you make it too thick, you're going to get a bellyache. Or if you're not used to having a lot of chocolate sauce on your ice cream, and now you put banana split and cherries and sprinkles and everything else, well, that's too much. You've got to balance that out. And that's what progesterone is the great balancer.
Well, what's the impact that changing hormones have on female organs during a woman's lifetime? How about that?
What a great question. And I'm going to lead off with a little bit of a two-minute didactic that most people are not aware of, is that it's in a woman's lifetime, Our hormone levels are non-existent until we go through puberty. Well, that makes sense, right? So our femaleness, just like guys' maleness, starts at age 12 to 13, which is average age of puberty in the U.S. Well, then women have this bell curve where it goes up by the time you're in your 20s, and you're staying at 100th percentile, 90th percentile all through your 20s. You're hitting on all pistons. In your 30s, you're going between 75th and 90th. And then in your 40s, like you do in your adolescent years, your average goes down, just like in your adolescent years, your average goes up, but the swings are like a crazy roller coaster, super high, super low, super high, super low. And that swing is what can cause so many women problems. So that bell curve that averages out for women will come to an end with menopause. Average age is age 15 and a half in the U.S. But some women will go a little bit longer. Some women will go a little less. But that's a bell curve, and nobody ever tells women that. Guys, however, have this curve that starts high, and it's this very gentle slope, kind of like taking a green cruiser when you're out west skiing. You know, it's just an easy downhill. You can just keep going, very minimal work, but it's just this gentle slope down. And by the time guys reach 100, they still have 20th percentile of their testosterone around. Well, women, we're done by 50 and a half, and it's like, where to go? So it's no surprise that we go from super high, super low, and the body scratches its head and it goes, what just happened here? Wait a minute, we were used to having those female hormones around, so I'd like some back, please.
Wow.
So that's kind of what hormone replacement is all about, but nobody ever tells women that.
Interesting. And you mentioned hormones in guys, and you talk about when guys reach 100. That doesn't happen that often, you know, does it?
Well, it should. I mean, that's a whole different topic. That's energy medicine, but that's a whole different topic, you know. But should we and can we and are we built to live longer than the current life expectancy? Absolutely. It's what medicine and things in our food supply, things in our air, how do we beat our bodies up? And is that really one of the major reasons that we have longevity that says we make it to 78 or 80? It's probably more dependent on that, because our body is meant to heal itself. And so it knows what to do. We simply have to put things in proper balance in order to let our body work at its best.
How about that? Interesting. Well, that is another discussion. Yeah, exactly. But let's get back to women's diseases and the importance of progesterone, for example. What about the subject of cancer? Have breast, uterine, and ovarian cancer rates risen in recent years? And is there a connection between cancer and progesterone?
Well, the rates have, quote, unquote, been a mixed picture, and I'm going to say it that way deliberately because, you know, when we realized that breast and uterine and ovarian cancer were out there, they were like a death sentence for women because we didn't understand them. We just waited and crossed our fingers and hoped we weren't going to be one of those women that was going to have to deal with that. And then medicine kind of started looking at ways you could attack the cancer. But my premise is, why do we wait? Why don't we understand where breast cancer's origins are? Why don't we understand uterine and ovarian cancer origins? These are all female hormonal organs. So wouldn't it make a ton of sense to say we have to understand what the organ is doing in context with where your hormone levels are or where they've been? Have they been balanced? Have they been imbalanced? What has led us to this diagnosis? Not wait with blinders on until we get a cancer diagnosis and then scramble and go, oh, my God, I've got chemo for that. Oh, my God, I've got surgery for that. Oh, my God, I've got radiation for that. Well, wait a minute. That's a dollar late and, you know, and a dime short. We're reacting instead of being proactively preventive of these diseases. And that's where I think medicine really needs to take its next steps. It doesn't need another cancer drug that buys a woman another 6 weeks of crappy lifestyle because she's sick all the time. What we need is to take a step back and look back. That's what most illness needs, is figure out its root cause. Where did this come from? And let's work backwards to then work forwards and be preventive, not reactive.
That's a very important observation you have. No kidding. It sounds to me like you're right. You're definitely right, although I'm not a doctor. Let me talk to you a little bit about preventative medicine for female organ disease. Has it changed much in the years that you've been practicing?
Oh, well, that depends on who you ask. Now, you ask me, I'm going to say they talk lip service to preventive medicine, and I'm going to give you two really good examples, okay? The first example is the annual exam. Now, every woman listening, even most guys listening, knows that back even 20 years ago, we did a better job with the annual exam because it was the annual exam, okay? Wow, what a concept. You went in once a year. Your doctor did a head-to-toe, and in a female exam, you got your pap smear, your breast check, and most docs, if they were good, were also doing a rectal with their pelvic exam because now you did a colon cancer screen at the same time. And then you got your script for your mammogram if you were of the right age, and you were getting all of your female organs preventatively checked, as well as your blood pressure and blah, blah, blah. And you had this ongoing annual relationship with your primary or your GYN. And it was just the ritual. You went in for your annual exam. Well, then insurance companies started realizing that they were paying too much for this. And the guise that was told to the American people was, well, you know, we've beaten, you know, cervical cancer. We know it's a virus now. So as long as we do these vaccines, these HPV vaccines, these viruses, then we don't need to do a pap smear as often, which is going to cut down on people going to the doctor. So we don't have to pay as much out once a year. We can just have women go once every 3 years. So they actually, and I'm going to use this word, I apologize, they bastardized the annual exam into a once every 3 year exam, which people are people, so they stretch it to 4 years or 5 years. So now women are many times not even going to the doctor on an annual basis. They're going once every 3 to 5 years, and all hosts of things can pop up in 3 to 5 years when you were used to going once a year. You're not having conversations with your doctor anymore about your mental health. You're not having conversations anymore about how your GI tract is working. You're not having those regular conversations that kept women the sage of the medical knowledge of their household. And never mind that they're not even in charge of what's happening to their body because they're told they don't need a pap smear except every 3 to 5 years. Well, what medicine said was that, but they translated to, therefore, I don't need an exam every 3 to 5 years. Well, that's not true. We all know that your annual will get covered by your insurance once a year, correct? That's all part of preventive, quote-unquote, medicine. But who goes? They only go if they need their pap smear. Or they're told they have to go in because their doctor says you can't get your prescription unless you come in. Well, what has the annual exam now morphed into? It morphed into a 5-minute somebody else, you know, the PA or the nurse takes your blood pressure, does your vital signs. The doctor walks in, makes a pretense of putting a stethoscope on your chest and on your heart, you know, does a pat, pat, pat around the breast, does a pat, pat around your tummy, never does the pelvic exam in 3 out of 5 cases, and that never looks from the waist down. You never looks at your legs. Do you have varicose veins? They don't know. They never looked. No hemocult is being done because now we have colonoscopies for that. So the exam has become a sham. It has become an absolute, what I call a disgrace to the patient, because it is in name only an exam. It's usually a 2-minute, you know, quick in, quick out. You don't even have a chance to ask a question, and the doc's flying out the door, and you really didn't learn anything about your body. Instead of once a year going in, being able to ask questions, having a head-to-toe exam, being taught what your exam means as the doc is doing it, and getting useful information from it. So it has become, by name only, an annual. Again, most people don't really go annually, and that's wrong. So in that regard, we're missing the golden opportunities that we had in the past because we took the quote-unquote drop in cervical cancer rate as that means we're overall in all areas healthier, therefore we just don't need to go to the doctor. And I disagree, terribly disagree with that statement.
Wow, that's very interesting. Do you insist your patients come to you at least once a year and do that physical?
Oh, at least. And realize that as a preventive doc, I'm doing hormone balancing, as you so very kindly mentioned on the intro, and I'm balancing their female-male hormones, for guys male, for women male and female, but it's also balancing their thyroid and their adrenal and their insulin, and their vitamin D is a great balancer as well. And then what does the rest of your blood work look like? Well, most traditional docs don't look at all that hormone stuff. That's for the specialist. Well, no, that's the foundation. That's really where we come from, is from our hormone base. And if you don't know where that base is, you really don't know much about how your body works, because other organs are going to work based on how well your hormone levels are balanced. And most docs are never taught that. And if they can teach themselves that, but they're so busy running in and out of exam rooms every 2 to 3 minutes and being told by their system how many quotas of people they have to see, that they don't really learn the value of knowing those basics. So I balance those in my patients on a seasonal basis every 3 months, because our bodies do change over the course of our seasons and over the course of a year.
That's so amazing. How long does it typically take for you to do an annual physical on one of your clients?
I take a full 20 minutes because I teach a patient from head to toe why I'm examining them the way I examine them. So I'll go down their neck and I'll explain, this is where your thyroid lives. Now go ahead and swallow. Okay, now feel mine. Now feel how you can feel an Adam's apple. Feel how you can't feel yours. You feel that little lump over there? That means you've got a nodule. That means you might have Hashimoto's. And they look at you like, oh my God, is that contagious? Well, no, that's autoimmune thyroid disease. We'll check that with your blood work. Now let me take a look into your lungs. Oh, you've got pre-bronchitis. Here's the difference in what I'm hearing. I teach them what their heart sounds should be and why I have them do certain maneuvers when I'm listening to their heart to see if their heart is reacting in a healthy manner. I teach them what I'm doing when I walk around their abdomen and what that means. So it's invaluable if you can teach a patient what their body is telling them by symptom and then prove it or disprove it on their exam. Now they're going to have a meaningful phone call with you down the road about, Doc, I've got abdominal pain. And you taught me in this right side is where bloat starts, and that's where my appendix is. I don't think it's my appendix because when I tap it, it sounds hollow. So I think it's bloating. You know. So now they're taking what I taught them, and they're carrying it forth into how they care for themselves and their family. What a marvelous tool that is.
Wow. You know, I'm amazed you can do all of that in 20 minutes.
Oh, absolutely.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Fun, because it's interactive. You know, how many times, you know, do we teach a child something, and if we're the only one speaking, it's boring, and we get bored quickly, and they get bored, so they start looking off. Well, if you draw that child in, or you draw the patient in, and it becomes an interactive interplay, it's so much more fun, and they learn, and you learn a little bit more about them, because they may say, oh, you know, last week I had this thing right here, and it felt like just what you're doing right now. What could that be? Well, you could have had heartburn in the beginning of, you know, what we would call a hiatal hernia that might want to try to start. So realize you can pull that down. Here's how you do it, you know. So it's interactive, and it's so much more enjoyable for both parties to have it be an interchange like that.
Yeah, and your patient learns a lot about their body, which normally they wouldn't.
Isn't that a wonderful thing to understand?
Absolutely.
The signs? Yeah.
For sure. Do me a favor. Define PCOS for me.
Polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS, which is what a lot of people will shorten that to. And
right.
Polycystic ovary is, most people hear that term and they think, okay, an ovary with poly, many, cysts on that ovary. And so they think of this ovary that looks like it's got, you know, all these big lumps coming out of it. But really, what a polycystic ovary is a slightly enlarged, think of it as a bloated ovary that has hundreds of tiny cysts in it. And these tiny cysts are the problem because they prevent, in many cases, the normal regular functioning of that ovary, which will make two cysts every month when it functions appropriately, a follicular cyst to make the egg ready to ovulate it, and then that cyst will involute to make a luteal cyst to make progesterone. So we normally, in a normal ovary, make two cysts a month. But in a polycystic ovary, all those hundreds of tiny little cysts make testosterone. And you go, wait a minute. That's a male hormone. Right. So if you're making hundreds of little tiny cysts that are making testosterone, do you think that your testosterone level that we measure in your bloodstream is going to be elevated? Yes. And that causes problems in a woman's body because we're meant to be girls, not boys. So a polycystic ovary has, you know, it's just a little bit larger. It's a little bloated. So it's tough to pick up on a pelvic exam. And unfortunately, there aren't good criterion to determine that this is exactly what we're dealing with, because medicine hasn't put any research resources into it. We know there are soft indicators, stronger indicators, and you need either 5 soft or 3 strong or whatever in order to, quote-unquote, put that diagnosis on a patient. But I can put that diagnosis on a patient by checking their hormone levels. Because if you're making more testosterone than you should, gee, that's something's wrong here, unless you're taking something to cause that excess testosterone production. If you aren't taking something, then your body is making it. It's a pretty simple jump to say it's one or the other. And then doing an ultrasound to prove it can be helpful, but it's genetic. And so polycystic ovary patients have a lot of hormone imbalance because they have excess testosterone. And when that happens, they have lower female hormone. And every once in a while, sometimes it's every 6 months, sometimes it's every 8 months, they'll pop through and a regular cycle will happen that they'll have normal female levels, but then they revert right back to too much male hormone. And so their body hormonally acts like they're in their 40s for their entire menstrual career. They go up and down, this very roller coaster female hormone level of stuff that makes it very difficult for them to be able to predict when they can get pregnant or what their fertility issues are or what is even a regular cycle. So that is fraught with all sorts of issues that it really deserves a whole show on its own, because I could go into much greater depth about the issues that polycystic bring.
You know, you, the way you talk, you're describing so much going on in the average woman's body. My assumption is most women have no clue about all of this activity taking place in their own body. Do they?
They don't, because docs don't check. And all they'll say is if a woman walks in and says, "Doc, I've got irregular periods." "Well, let me put you on the pill. We'll just cover all that up."
Right.
And, you know, and so you assume that that's the norm, that's the practice. Or a doc says, "Well, are you interested in contraception?" "Yes, I am." "Well, let me put these rods in your arms so that, or give you a depot shot so that it's quick, it's easy, and you don't have to think about it." Well, what docs are never told, and therefore the patient never learns, is that those can be dangerous to a woman. And a depot shot, which is an artificial progesterone, is the most dangerous hormone out there. It causes breast cancer. It causes problems that women have no clue until all of a sudden they can't get pregnant. And all of a sudden they have breast cancer and they go, "Where'd this come from?" "Oh, I don't know. Gee, I don't know. Well, we have a treatment for that. You know, let's send you to the oncologist." And we wipe our hands and we send them off to the oncologist. So we sometimes give our patients breast cancer. And we don't mean to, but we're, you know, unless we pay attention to the research and what's out there that says that something like a Depo Provera causes breast cancer, then we're the problem. We are part of the problem and not the solution. So docs really need to stop putting their head in the sand and realizing that they need to learn more. They need to address women's health as a preventive, not just waiting until you have a lump on a breast exam or waiting until a bad mammogram or a bad pap smear. We have to be proactive, manage women's hormones levels, and then guess what? We won't have lumps on a breast check. We won't have a bad mammogram. We won't have a bad pap smear. We'll even have regular periods. What a concept. But we don't do it. We wait for a problem.
I have to ask you, for women who don't have the advantage to talk to you, you know, or someone like you, you wrote this great book called Full Bloom. And are things like this discussed in that book?
Absolutely. And I go through the research in a way that the average ordinary person understands what the progression of the research is and where we are, why we are where we are. I didn't write this for docs. Docs think they know all of this. But it isn't taught in medical schools. So if they're not going to teach it, then I'm going to make women aware. So I wrote Full Bloom for the 40 and beyond woman. I wrote Blossoming for the adolescent as a mother-daughter guide, because I want women to understand they can be in charge of their own health care. And so these books are available on Amazon, very easy reads. They're a wonderful gift for anyone on your Christmas list. They're a marvelous resource for any school district out there that's trying to get on top of helping their adolescent school population.
They're just great books.
Good
Dr.
tool.
Vicki, we're almost out of time. Those books, by the way, it's Dr. Victoria Monlock. She is the author of those books. Look them up. They're on available on Amazon. We'll welcome you back again next week, Dr. Vicki. I love having you as a guest. You're so informative. Have a good week. We'll talk to you next week. All right? Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.